You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Sally Cade Holmes. Sally Cade is a producer. We know each other through the University of Evansville alumni community, although she was there right after I graduated. We didn't overlap. She has just been on fire as a commercial producer in recent years, including being involved in producing the Tony Award-winning Hadestown, which sadly I still have not seen. I hope it'll come back after all of this settles down, as well as The Inheritance on Broadway. She was involved with producing that. She has recently struck out on her own instead of working for another company, and you can find out more info about her and her work at sallycadeholmes.com. She just has a fantastic energy, the kind of person you want to be in a room with. And I was especially excited to hear about, even though we recorded this over FaceTime in mid-March, shortly after we all started sheltering in place, I was especially excited to hear about her passion for educating young theater professionals and students on what producers do and all the amazing different paths available in the theater that aren't necessarily being on stage, all the things that really offer a different kind of artistry and way of making the work happen. This is a really scary time. I hope you're doing okay. And I'm thinking about all of you, sending a lot of love. Stay home, stay safe. And I hope you enjoy the 156th episode of The Compass.
Side, White Claw and therapy. No.
Such a good mix.
Just kidding. I don't do that. But therapy, no, real. I am a person who, you know, I was a performer for a long time, and I'm now like trying to find what pieces of that carry into producing. And I found that sometimes the emotional element of that and like the thinking about how I feel about things, it's presented differently in the performance world and in the business world. So I'm constantly negotiating those things. So sometimes it feels like I don't even acknowledge the dark side when we're going there. So for me, it's a constant question of like, how do I actually feel about these things? How do I feel like this is teetering on a dark side? And I think that's actually the healthy question for me, because if I get too tied up in how I, you know, it's easy to fall down a spiral, I think, and just get into my emotions when in reality it has to be there has to be action taken. So at a certain point, it is a skill to say, you know what, I'm going to pause this right now. I'm going to take the action, and then I will deal with it outside of this moment, which is a unique, and I think that is part of my art, is how to negotiate those things.
Yeah, because it's these things are expressed in like a different language in the side of the business you're in now. That's fascinating.
Totally, totally.
I love that you say it as action, though. That's great.
100%. And that is, that's all. And sometimes I've learned in the past few years, like the best action is actually inaction. So like,
pause.
That's a very, sorry about that. My mom called. So we can like,
no, it's fine. I was actually saying the word pause in context, but
flipped
for a second and I was like, weird.
I was a person who was like, we have to move the football down the field. We have to keep going. We have to da 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 da. And I've realized watching these kind of behemoth shows grow that sometimes pausing is the action, which is unique and kind of antithetical to my type A nature. And honestly, this moment in history we're in right now, this pandemic is like causing us as a culture to pause, I think.
Yeah.
and breathe and sit still, and like, what does that do for us? What do I as a producer learn from this? Like, how do we strategically employ the skill that we're all learning in the future? All of these are questions I am asking myself.
Yeah. Well, should we just dive into that? It's the thing that's in our faces right now. Let's just talk about that. Yeah. And then we'll continue on to greater career things. But
oh man, how are you feeling about it?
I mean, I waver between being able to think about the larger scale of it and possible implications and just focusing on the day to day, which I'm totally privileged and fine and safe and with my family and refrigerator full of food, etc. And working a day job right now that I'm able to work from home and continue getting paid for. So I'm very lucky in that.
That's amazing.
I've worked in the food industry in the past and that's not the case right now. So yeah, I toggle throughout the day between those two things. And I'm just trying to get out of the way to try to make it easier for other people. And I have we'll see what happens, but I have no desire to experience this sickness firsthand. So just trying to be careful.
Yeah, totally.
And it does help having a year and a half year old in the apartment, like who's just oblivious and is really happy that, you know, my husband was doing a show for 2 months out of town and I was usually at work. I work from home 1 day a week and out of the office 4 days a week. So usually at work. So she's kind of like thrilled that we're both around and like kind of crazed with the excitement of having both parents around. So it's
keeps you in the moment to make this equation. But I have a dog who is also excited.
It's okay.
I know. I was talking to somebody recently who like equated their child to a puppy, and I was like, okay, cool, you did it. Now I could do it. No, but yeah, Pickle is very excited that I'm around.
Oh, Pickle.
And also like talk about ways that I cope with the dark side. He is one of those ways. Like he is he's just like a lovely presence in my day-to-day life that is keeping me grounded and like reminding me I need to go outside and experience air. And as far as like how this pandemic is affecting what I am feeling and what I am doing, having this little like hopeful silver lining piece of it that what comes out of this will be a larger cultural conversation surrounding the issues regarding sustainability in our industry. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that our industry has to stop for 8 weeks and 4 to 8, and we don't know what the ramifications are. I feel as though we should be setting ourselves up for success in the future using this as a template for like a disaster scenario. How do we all work together to craft a better future so that this won't be a disaster? You know, how can we all continue these dialogues that are happening right now to create a stronger industry? And I think that requires everybody coming to the table and everybody putting their listening ears on and recognizing that we're all after the same goal. Like we are all the producers, the actors, the stagehands, everybody is after the same goal of a healthy Broadway/theatrical community.
Yeah. When do you think that'll have to take place in hindsight, or is it something that is already starting now, that conversation?
I think the conversations are happening, but I think it's going to be partially in hindsight and partially as everybody's in action mode. Everybody's in like, how do we stop the bleeding?
Right.
So some of the foundational decisions that are being made now, I think will affect the hindsight. But I think that people are thinking that way, which is exciting. Yeah. And maybe a small silver lining. And I also think some great art is going to come out of it.
Oh, for certain. And I'm already just so inspired, even though as a parent, I haven't gotten to take advantage of a lot of it. But the things I'm seeing via Instagram of artists teaching classes and sharing their work and sharing their skills with people already in this like first week that it's really hit is yes. incredible.
It's so good.
So we'll see what happens.
It's so good.
Ugh. We'll definitely be some good art coming out of it. But it is, you know, I don't know what the statistic is, but you always hear the frighteningly large statistic across the country of people saying that, you know, they're living paycheck to paycheck. And that's going to be scary to see the repercussions of it, but that's, you know, that's definitely true a lot in the arts, just, and it seems to be the way the, industry is built. Like, it's not that, oh, just, you're not saving your money. It seems like, no, this is the way this functions and you have to be okay with it. It's like, you're only getting paid enough to do this. Well, you work on a different scale than I do, but...
Well, no,
Broadway paychecks for the actors at least are larger than others.
Yeah, I would also mention that like commercial producers don't make money unless the show is recouped. So like right. I am trying to figure out how to make money doing what I want to do with my life.
Right, along the way and not just you have to pay bills every month.
Exactly.
So tell me some about that. Tell me some about how you're putting together the financial stuff.
Oh, sure.
Since you got out of school, like what sorts of day jobs, what sorts of ways do work that out?
I was just thinking about my first day job right after undergrad because it has come back. The connections I made there have like stayed with me for years. So my first job out of undergrad at 22 years old, was working for, bus extravaganza called The Ride that a lot of people
do. You know Nate Miller? Was he working?
Yes, yes. He was working there at the time because I was also working with Laura Ramaday producing a show that she was in.
Gotcha.
And then we ended up both being BP lab together as producers. It was very, this job has connected me to so many people. Yeah, I was an audience services agent, which meant I put people on the bus. My friends and I would go drink a Four Loko and then get people off of the bus.
Oh God.
It was the early 2010s. Yeah, that was irresponsible, but it was fun. And, so that was a survival gig. I was like an HR, manager at this internet marketing company that like they gave me way too much responsibility way too soon. I was like, I'm a liability to everyone. I have a theater degree. And I'm over
and they're
here
like, you're so good
decisions.
With people.
Like, that's not how you were supposed to get this job. No, I was the temporary like office assistant and the HR director just liked me. So she was like, come work with me. I was like, sure. And then she left on maternity leave. And I was like the interim HR, the head of HR. I was like, this is not okay. Yeah, and then I left. I did grad school for a little while in arts administration because I had just found producing. And I was like, okay, cool. I have this degree in like theater generalism, which I love. But I should probably specialize in something management-y. So I went to this program for arts administration in Boston, and it afforded me the opportunity to do an internship at Williamstown, which then afforded me the opportunity to meet my future boss. And once I got a gig working on Broadway, I was like, well, I'm not going to go finish my master's degree.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I took a casual 5.5 years off. And then, in the past few months, I've left this steady job that I loved at Tom Kurdicke Productions. I was the associate producer there and I have gone out on my own and I am trusting this invisible safety net that hopefully will weave its way under me, totally acknowledge my privilege in my ability to do that. But I also in that decision was like, this could be a great time for me to go back and finish this degree that I started 5.5 years ago. Well, like 7 years ago, actually. and, you know, I weirdly am able to weather this pandemic a little less stressfully because I have some student loan money that I'm like sitting on,
right?
Because I'm back in school. So in a weird way, I'm like,
it's working out okay.
Yeah, it's working out okay.
So when you were working for someone else as a producer, can you just give me an idea of like how large that office is?
Oh yeah.
I feel
it
like
grew.
For...
So when I started working there, it was, I started part-time and there were two other part-time folks. They were primarily, the other two part-time people were primarily artists because that's who this producing office draws, like people who are passionate about the work. And I think that's actually what gives Tom Kerdeke Productions an edge. Like they are incredible and filled with artists and people who know how to speak with artists. And I was the one who kind of switched into management mode, but I can still do listen, I love to talk about plays. So that was how it started. And then as we had more shows on Broadway, the office kind of grew and my role grew. And what I end up saying is as an associate producer, like Tom, who is the president of the company, had to be in like 7 million places at once. And I would take like 13 of those and represent in those. But across the board, just kind of a catch-all position. That was great. And I learned so much.
I'm sure.
An unbelievable amount.
Do you feel like, it sounds like a lot of the stuff that you've learned has just been hands-on, on-the-job training, which makes sense. That sounds like...
Yeah, I this is a thing that I struggle with in our industry, actually, because the path to do what I want to do
mm-hmm.
feels very much like luck is required.
Yeah. What is your experience of going the grad school route now and like picking up things that way as opposed to the luck that you've had and learning on the job side of your career so far?
I, at this point, grad school is to get the paper. Like I have learned a lot of hands-on. A lot through hands-on like experience. It's also tricky because this graduate degree is in arts administration, which is a very different thing than commercial producing. There is the Commercial Theater Institute, which, you know, is run by the Broadway League or in partnership with the Broadway League. I'm not actually sure of that relationship, but they do a good job of like the basics of commercial producing. But it's like a professional program. Part of me is curious what this industry would look like if people were to go into undergrad and existing graduate programs and actually kind of lift the veil of opacity surrounding producing. My crusade at this moment, and hopefully a way that I could make a little money to live off of, is to figure out how to introduce producing vocabulary to BFA and MFA students who are actors, playwrights, directors, so that we can all galvanize around each other once people have graduated and recognize that, like, yes, you're going to have to self-produce. Yes, these are the conversations you're going to have with producers. Like, if you hear this, that might be a red flag. Like, you don't want to work with that person. Like, here are... And here is the art of producing as well. I think that so many of these educational institutions, because of the opacity surrounding what I do, think of me like sitting above the Belasco Theater, smoking a cigar, like counting my coins, like, you know, what Scrooge McDuck. And it's like, that's not what I do.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, yeah, there's just like a lack of knowledge, I think. I don't, especially on huge productions, you think of the producers, you're like, oh, they're the money person. I don't know how they got the money. I don't know how they brought the money, but somehow they're the person with the money.
Right.
I think that's an amazing mission. Plus, yeah, I'm sure it would just lead to better collaborations. And also, Like, I know that you kind of had this with Puffs, and it's the kind of working relationships that I love the best, like collaborating with your peers and kind of growing up the ladder together.
Oh, totally. That's my idea of what producing is. It's developing relationships with artists until we're all at a point where we can jump off the cliff together and do something massive. That's what it is. And in the meantime, like, yes, I have to find the investors. Sure. That's like a thing that has to happen, and a thing that luckily I've been in the right places at the right times to have some very passionate investors. And that will hopefully, knock on wood, continue. So it's really just trusting your artists and finding those relationships and supporting the work that comes out of them.
So can you talk a little bit about how Puffs came about and how that...
Oh my gosh, yeah.
What role that played in your stepping stones?
Yeah, so I... Puffs existed... Like, I was not an early team member on Puffs. The group... Chris McCarthy Parker, a dear friend.
Mm-hmm. Who's been on the podcast. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but yes.
We love. I'm having a COVID-19 digital date with Kristen and a bunch of our college friends after this.
Lovely.
So I knew Kristen was attached to it. I had seen it at the Electra Theater, but I was not a part of it yet, and it had commercial producers attached to it. And then I was approached after they got kicked out of the Electra Theater and were moving to New World Stages, if I wanted to come on board as a co-producer. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Number one, the terms were really good. So like, it was a priority loan, which meant that my investors would put in their money and also get their money back fastest. So that felt like a really safe endeavor, because commercial off-Broadway is really risky. Even though Puffs had a lot going for it,
right.
Still a risk. So I jumped on board at that point for a million reasons. The show is incredible. It's brilliant. It's brilliantly directed. It's brilliantly written. It was like right on the zeitgeist in that moment. It checks the box that I have on every show that I'm a part of right now, which is some sort of hopefulness, some sort of... optimistic worldview. I'm just in a space in my career where that is important to me. So I jumped on board, and I was walking with David Carpenter, the lead producer, and we were chatting about merch and how I was really curious about that world, and I had been the point person on merch for another show, but from the producer side. And he was like, well, would you be interested in doing it for Puffs? And I was like, sure. And I did. And that was my first merchandise client. So I have this other side business now because of Puffs.
And when you say that, is that like designing the merch, or what does that involve?
It's so my dear sweet younger sister is a graphic designer who I...
That is so handy. Thank you, sister. This. Yeah.
She's not that sweet. Also, she got a really good deal. I like negotiated against myself there. I didn't have money to pay her a fee up front, so I gave her a royalty on the sales of this one very popular shirt. And I was like, damn, like, I am paying her so much for this. And I finally just stopped sending checks. We have to stop. I'm not getting her a Christmas present because I can't afford it, because I'm paying her so much for this t-shirt. Anyway, so she did the designs.
Okay, great. Well, I love that you have your hands in so many different pies. Like, that's a great way to like keep diversified and like always be growing and learning along the way.
I think so. I struggle with how to manage my time a lot, like how to devote enough to each project so that everybody feels that they are getting my full attention.
How do you take time off? Are you figuring that out? Or do you feel like you work all around the clock?
I'm pretty good at saying, I'm done around 6 or 7, you know? And then obviously I go see a show, which is work, but not actually because I love it.
Yeah.
I think that I see the societal trend of like working really hard as like something that is cool. And I have no desire to be a part of that. I'm all about work smarter, not harder. Like, I'm sorry, if I can solve something in 2 minutes, why would I spend 20 minutes fretting over it? Like, that's my MO there.
Yeah. You just talked about your sister, but what do your parents do? What do they think about you being an artist for your career?
Oh my gosh, my mom constantly... Because I've done a lot of things in my career, you know? I've been an HR director. I've, like, been an audience services agent. I dabbled in acting for a little while. I, like, was in grad school, and I was a freelance writer for a hot second. And my mom is constantly like, see, that's what a theater degree will do. You can act like you're anything. And I'm like, okay, sure. We'll go with that. I think they're very proud of the fact that I'm treating this artist's life as an entrepreneur, as an exercise in entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if I were spending more time, I think they would struggle if I were only acting or only directing or only, like, I think they are really proud of the fact that I did a lot of different things. But they're fine. They're good. They're really proud of both of us.
I'm sure it must have been exciting when they came to see these Broadway shows that you were involved in.
Oh yeah. They were my dates to, Anastasia was my first Broadway show that like my name was above the title. And they were my dates to opening, and they came to see Hadestown. They're big fans. They're big fans.
What's the community like for producers? Do you feel like you're in communication with a lot of other of your peers?
Honestly, we're also head down, siloed, mm-hmm. like working all the time on our individual projects. That I always know they're there. Like, I have some deep, wonderful connections to my peers. But it's kind of this trust that, like, if you need somebody, you can ask for it. There's rarely, like, hey, how you doing text until now. I think that this pandemic is, like, going to cause a revolution in communication almost. Like, I've been FaceTiming with peers. I've been texting these people who are incredibly ambitious, who all of a sudden have had the rug ripped out from under them, and being like, how are you doing? Like, there is this galvanizing moment between, like, I think friend groups and also peer groups.
Well, hopefully it'll bring on some radical empathy in this country.
honestly, my parents, who are Republicans in South Carolina, said the same thing.
Really?
They were like, this, I think this is a sign that we all need to come together. And I was like, really? Okay.
All right. So in your quest to inform young artists and to, are you interested? I don't want to put words in your mouth. Are you interested in mentoring younger producers?
Oh, absolutely. That's yeah.
Like in that quest, how are you making yourself a resource? How are you putting yourself out there?
It's really interesting. I would say like 3 months ago, I really didn't like that label, mentor. I actually, mm-hmm. my good friend and colleague who worked in my office with me would like tease me and be like, you're my mentor. And I'd be like, no, I'm not. We're peers. But I do feel like since I have left like my steady job and I'm doing this on my own, there has kind of been a shift in, I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know if it's just like, I have to be more front footed. But something about that has made me feel confident owning the label mentor, and speaking with people, and also recognizing, like, I know shit. Like, I actually do know things.
Yeah.
And the way that I employ that, I actually, Erica Holland has this organization that I just joined, and I'm really excited to do that. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it's going to be great.
Let's Google it, guys. I feel like I know what you're talking about, but I can't think what it is either.
It's really exciting, and I owe them an email. I'm saying that publicly.
But it's all about connecting mentors, right?
Yeah. Statera.
Statera Arts.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So I'm really excited to dive into that. I am the co-leader of the WP Producers Lab, which, here's the thing about mentorship. I learn more from those people than I think they learn from me. Like, hard stop, I am the luckiest person to be able to, like, just be in these producers' presence. So basically, mentoring is just, like, me learning things. It's not a selfless act. But yeah, the WP Lab is a big part of what I do. And then I recently started, actually today was the first time I've done this, and I'm kind of obsessed with it. I talked to a high school student for 30 minutes today, just because I'm like, these kids are sitting at home, like, doing homeschool stuff, being quarantined. I'm sitting at home looking for, you know, gigs and trying to plan things that cannot be planned. Like, I cannot plan when the LA version of my show can open because we don't know.
Right.
So why would I spin my wheels, and why not just speak to people who are passionate about this art form, about, like, the industry things that I know? So I chatted with a high school student, and I kind of want to do more of that.
How did you connect with that student?
A friend knew this young person who was excited about theater and said, you guys should talk, and we did.
So what sorts of advice did you give this student today as far as getting into producing? Since you were saying, like, the weird thing is that it takes a lot of luck. Like, what are some ways to get around that?
That's a great question. This particular student, she was very much just curious about the industry as a whole. Uh-huh. So my goal is to be sure young people know that there are other career paths that also involve art, that are not, you know, that, like, yes, being on stage is wonderful and magical, and that's how most of us got involved in this art form. But if I had known producing was a career option in undergrad, I probably would have pursued it earlier.
Hmm.
So that, and producing, just to say, like, theater management is one thing. Producing feels different. It feels like a lot of educational institutions prepare you to go out and be in a nonprofit world, which is great. But I am curious in this other side. Anyway, opening up the worldview to be sure there is an acknowledgement of everybody listed on the title page of a Broadway show. There are marketing agencies. There are press offices. There are producing offices. There's, like, general managers. There are all of these opportunities that are, I would argue, art. I take a very broad view of what that word means.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm confident in that view. But yeah, so I told her that. I told her to look at the title page. And then also, everything is your relationships. That's what everything comes back to in my mind.
Right. So that's the part that kind of takes some strategy and some luck together. It's like finding...
Yeah.
Finding those genuine relationships, but figuring out which ones you really need.
Yeah, and also, being open to all of them, though. Like, I think there's a there has to be a genuine curiosity about human beings, mm-hmm. so that you can then and determine, like, now I have this connection with this person. The question isn't like, how will I use it? The question is, like, how does this person need me? How do I need this person? Like, I think that's an important articulation.
Yeah, totally. Because I think sometimes people get swept up in quote unquote networking, and it can feel, just like the idea of it feels very schmarmy, and like people are using each other and you're not actually talking to each other.
I feel that we're moving past, I feel we're in like a neo-networking moment, or a post-networking, where
I hope so.
Where there is a focus on authenticity, because there is nothing that turns me off more than just like knowing somebody is coming at me as a networking thing. I'm like, oh no.
Do you feel like some of that is because of the rise of social media? Because I feel like when I graduated grad school, which was 10 years ago, it was still a little bit of like, you need to present yourself in this specific way. And then as Instagram and as like the world of social media as like an extension of you as an artist has grown, it's been more about like revealing yourself more than, well, I guess there's a wide gamut, but
I would say it's even broader than that. I would say it's the internet as a whole. Like, I think of these kids that are in undergrad right now, and I think of me in undergrad.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh my God.
And for producers, you have so many more tools at that age or that stage.
Exactly. And like, they are asking questions that I did not know existed. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I think technology and the internet has like required more authenticity because we know more. There can't be a painted veneer. I think I'm hypothesizing, but I think that's true. And I'm also just like in awe of students today. I wish I could go back and hang out with all of them and be a student as well.
Are there any lessons you've learned either personally or professionally over the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to share?
I think what I mentioned before about pausing is really important. I think knowing that sometimes the best action is inaction is a skill that you can't be taught, because, you know, when you graduate from the education corporation that some of our institutions are, it feels very like, in order to get ahead, you have to be front footed, you have to move, you have to like take action all the time. When in reality, like sometimes being too front footed will actually hinder you. So I think that's been a really, really important goal. And then also to be nimble with definitions of success.
Yes.
That's super, super important. And I don't think I could have said that 5 years ago.
Yeah. What is it looking like now? Nowadays?
For me, it is staying in myself and confident in that in order to remain my own boss and chart my own path. Because at a certain point, it would be easy to get a full-time job. And I have to keep reminding myself, that's not what you want. Like, you actually want to be the one who is creating the full-time jobs for other people. And that ties into, you know, like slowing down, recognizing that success might not happen in 5 years. It might be decades from now, and that's okay. And also, what is success? In my view, success is just getting the ball like a yard down the field. Like, it's remaining my own boss. It's being my own boss. It's all of those things. Yeah.
I love that. Was this transition, this big transition that you made from working for that other producer for such a long time into being your own boss, was that something that you had been planning for a long time? Or like, what made you feel like this is the moment where I'm going to, I'm going to take that step?
Yeah. 2016 was really, really seismic for me. The election in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have been in a better place. Like I volunteered for Hillary. I phone banked. I like ran an organization called Broadway for Hillary with a couple of my colleagues. And so the election happened and I was so supported in office. We were all, you know, the way everybody was, but like, it really unearthed a lot of things for me in terms of recognizing that I had been a rule follower my entire life. And like, what does that get you? Asking about a woman's place in leadership scenarios, all of those things. So the next year I did my annual review and I mentioned to my wonderful mentor boss, like, I don't know how to do this. Like, I see no examples of, and this was short-sighted of me at the time, but I was frustrated and I had gone through the election. And I was like, I do not see many examples of women who have gone on and like, they haven't been independently wealthy. They
right.
And then have like charted their own course in the commercial theater. He then like mentioned some examples and I was like, yes, we love them. But I was kind of in this moment of like hitting this ceiling. And it was also, I was an associate. I'd been an associate for a long time. The company had Tom's name on it. So I, you know, there's nowhere to go really. So I guess about a year and a half after that, we had another conversation and I was like, all right, at the end of this year, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go out on my own. And he was like, I think that's amazing. And I support you in every way. And like through this amazing going away party that I like, I don't know that anybody's ever done anything nicer for me. It was really spectacular. But no, it was a lot of like dark nights of the soul being like, how do I do this? Is this the right path? And how do I like chart this path for others?
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was a lot of crying and typing my annual review.
But what a wonderful experience having that positive learning environment job for so long to like help launch you into that next place.
Oh my gosh, I am the luckiest, truly. And that was all, I mean, it was a relationship. Like, we were at Williamstown, this guy was trying to use the copier and I was like, I got you, I know how to use that copier. And then we became friends and then I asked him to coffee and then he was my boss for 5 years. Like,
incredible.
Yeah,
I feel like people are going to be mad at me if we don't talk about your two most recent Broadway shows. I'm trying to think where to dive in.
Yeah.
How many producers are involved on a show like Hadestown or The Inheritance?
A lot. Both of those have a lot of producers. So it's also important to acknowledge that there are lead producers. Who are the people that are like making the decisions? Sorry, shut my door. Who are making the decisions and shepherding the play long before it's coming to Broadway? So typically they're anywhere from one to four of those, and then there are a significant number of co-producers because as Broadway gets more expensive, so do the number of co-producers. So, The Inheritance, The Inheritance actually is really interesting because the lead producers made a strategic move to bring on a very specific group of people that were intergenerational, a more diverse group than most shows, just based on the subject matter.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really spectacular. And but you look above the title, and there are a bunch of things. And I kind of love that. And I've made a lot of really lovely friends from that group of people. Hadestown, there are fewer, but it's still a bunch.
What is that collaboration like between the producers themselves on something like that?
Sure.
I know these are very basic questions, but no, it really is like what you do really is a mystery, I feel like, to the rest of the theater community.
Yeah. So co-producers, the goal is to be an ambassador for the show. In addition to raising your portion of the capitalization, which is required, it is how do I go out there and sell tickets to people, talk about the show everywhere I go, talk about it with my industry friends, like really representing the show. That's the co-producer's job. It's to be an ambassador everywhere.
So do you feel like everyone is kind of in their own lane doing that? Or did you feel like you were all collaborating in that effort?
Oh, yeah. I could speak to these two shows in particular. We have been incredibly galvanized. And the co-producers as a whole have all come together and wrapped their arms around these shows and each other.
Yeah.
And said, all right, we're in this. Because mm-hmm. both of them were massive risks, right? Like, I had a lot of trouble raising money for Hadestown because nobody knew what it was. It was breaking molds. People are very happy that they invested in it now, but it was a hard sell. The Inheritance wasn't actually a hard sell because so many people, that story resonates so deeply with so many people that I had people who didn't care, you know, if they would see a penny. They wanted to be a part of this thing. And the co-producers are the same way. We're in it for the passion for this story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been remarkable. And The Inheritance, I will say, so that was my last show as the associate producer at Tom Curtihy Productions. Mm-hmm. So I acted on it twofold. I was both Tom's associate and a co-producer.
Oh.
And same with Hadestown. So on The Inheritance, though, I'm really, really proud of the work we've done weaving the story into the community.
Uh-huh.
So we made a concerted effort to build deep relationships with the LGBT organizations in the city. So like we had the sponsored ticket initiative where people were able to donate money to a fiscal sponsor and we would give tickets to our community partners, which was incredible. We had this cool lobby series where 30 minutes prior to part two, we had the first one was the CEO of GMHC came in and talked about the state of HIV and AIDS in America today. Like, I mean, it was really spectacular, and I'm really proud of the work we've done on that show. I'm really sad it closed before the actual closing.
I know, how anticlimactic.
That's talk about therapy. I'm gonna have to like unpack that. It's tough. It's really, really tough.
Yeah.
No, that feels like I didn't get to say goodbye.
I know, and you guys were fairly close, right? It was supposed to close this month, but just not when it did.
Yeah, exactly. Aww. Exactly. Yeah.
How is that for you when you have shows that are long running? How is it for you with your workload when like you get something up and running and then you've moved on to other projects, but I assume you're still like with this drama that's happening now with Broadway being shut down, like you still need to be involved with whatever's happening with Hadestown, etc.
There are these magical people called general managers who, once a show is up and running, are the heroes, truly. producers obviously are key to guiding the ship. But the general managers are often the ones making the day-to-day decisions on those shows. And that's how it has to balance. Like there's no way one person could you're right, maintain for these long running shows.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I know those were very technical questions.
No, but... I love talking about it.
So when you do feel yourself going to that dark side or like the worn down, uninspired place, are there any tangible things that you reach for again and again, like books you reread or music you listen to or like personal touchstones like that?
I am obsessed with the London Philharmonic recording of the Carousel Waltz. It is like what I go back to. So it's the overture from the musical Carousel.
So specific. I love it.
I don't know what it is about it. I have this genre of music that I call music you can swim in, which I coined in college, and it still checks out to this day. And it's just one of those pieces of music that I feel so inspired by, and I feel so filled with wonder when I listen to it. So like that, and also memes. I'm really into memes these days. It allows me to just like turn my brain off for a second, reset, and just like dive back into what I was doing.
Laughter is very therapeutic. Yes. Wonderful. I love that. And then the last question is, although it's an interesting time to be asking this, is there anything you've seen recently of any art form that you want to recommend? So... Could be theater, could be a movie, could be anything.
I think everyone under the sun should listen to 1619, the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a New York Times podcast about the underpinnings of the U.S. Economy and how it is all inextricably linked to slavery. That it was revelatory and so human and important and wonderful. And then, oh gosh, I feel like I have so much. What else? I might just leave it at that right now because that's the first thing that popped in my mind, and now I have a million other things swirling in my head. But
no, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh my gosh, of course. Thank you, Leah. So nice to connect.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of the Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. Anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brandon Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.